Welcome to the latest edition of the 7 Minutes podcast starring Zach Fornaca, myself, Robert Marujo, and Angela Marujo. Why don't all three of us say hello? Hello.
Yay. Hello. Hello from Zach.
Hello from Angela.
So it's been a while since we've done this. Let's start off by discussing what lovely things we have to drink tonight. Mm. I am drinking a Nixie peach tea sparkling water. It's quite fabulous.
Peach black tea.
Peach black tea, yes. Zach, what are you drinking?
It's a Belgian ale. Leffe, I think that's probably how it's pronounced.
Okay.
I would have picked a different beer if I know I was going to have to pronounce the name. But it's tasty. It's a blonde.
Mm. Angela?
Well, I am drinking Itoen. Just the standard unsweetened green tea. This one's good, but my favorite is actually the Genmai Cha, followed by the Hojicha.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. And now, what have we been playing for the past week? Or perhaps, more to tradition, why don't you and Zach tell us about what you've been doing in Final Fantasy XIV and Animal Crossing?
Gladly.
Yep, no change. No change detected in what I've been playing. Although, I swear, I thought I had played something else. Maybe I'm wrong. No. Just been Final Fantasy XIV pretty heavily.
Did the Ninja Shy Guy thing happen?
Oh yeah. You know, so I've been really into Mario Kart Tour, and finally they brought back Ninja Shy Guy, put him in the spotlight. For people that don't really understand the game mechanics, every 2 weeks there's a new tour that starts, and you get this. There's this gacha mechanic. It's called like pipes that show up, and so since it's played on a phone with touch screens, you know, a pipe will appear, and then you pull down on the pipe, and you can get like a driver or a cart or a glider for free. And they have what are called like spotlight drivers, carts, gliders, for the pipes every week, and so you're guaranteed to get it. There's like 100 pulls on the pipe that you can do. By the end of those 100 pulls, if a character or a cart or a glider is in the spotlight, you're guaranteed to get it. But when you get it is a question. You could get it pretty early on, or you could, you know, you might have to empty the pipe, as they put it colloquially.
That's what she said.
Oh, geez. you know, I was actually going to make a joke about you had referred to your beer, because it is a blonde ale, but you'd referred to it, you said it was pretty tasty and it was blonde, and I was gonna, you know, like be mockingly offended and say, you know, excuse me, I'm a brunette.
And here you are spending all day pulling pipes in Mario World.
anyway, so Ninja Shy Guy, parenthetically Ninja, was the spotlight in the last tour. So I finally got him.
It's been a long time obsession.
Yeah. And I got the Ninja Scroll glider. The only thing I missed was, I can't remember what it was called. It's not Hot Rod. Anyway, the cart I think was supposed to be a frog. And, I didn't get that one, but I got like the dark version.
Yeah. Okay.
So almost got everything,
yeah.
But I got a lot of good content, and I got to play on the Ninja Hideaway tracks, because in these tours, you know, they're generally themed, and then in some tours you'll get new tracks, and when they debuted Shy Guy, it was like the Ninja Tour. I'm sorry, Shy Guy Ninja, it was the Ninja Tour, and so they had Ninja Hideaway. They debuted the Ninja Hideaway track, and so I didn't get to play it because I missed that whole tour. Like a clown. Like, of all of the tours, I don't know how I missed the ninja one. Anyway, but I finally got to play it. And it's great. The music is great. It's incredibly fun. There's all these different paths that you can take because it's like a ninja hideout. And there's all these ninja shy guys everywhere. and my heart just exploded with love.
Yeah. Well, I'm very happy for you and your heart and your shy guy, parentheses, ninja.
Oh, thank you. And it's really funny because, like, they're doing different things on the track. Like, you'll be driving through and then all of a sudden one will appear in front of you. Or, you know, who do, like, the poof ninja vanish thing. And, like, you know, who do, like, the ninja, like, hand thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then disappear and then leave a banana peel in his wake. Or, like, they'll be running alongside you while you're driving, which is actually really neat. But they're doing, like, the ninja run so that way they can get in front of you and kind of, like, psych you out and mess you up and then disappear again. But it's funny because, like, from behind.
I really appreciate this, the very detailed testimony about what a sucker you are.
Look, they're incredibly cute. And when you look at them running from behind in their little ninja costumes, like, they have kind of, like, poofy pants.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a poofy butt, you know? And so he's, like, running, and it's cute.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have, I think, only played Final Fantasy XIV since we last recorded. Last time I mentioned I had been leveling all of my jobs, and at this point I just have one job, scholar/summoner, left to finish off.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I've done in the game recently is I finished off the Masked Carnival.
Oh, wait, has this been the Blue Mage stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, so Blue Mage is an interesting job in the game. Uh-huh. All of the other combat jobs are, you're meant to, like, join up in parties. You have a defined role. And Blue Mage can't do most of that party content with other players, but what they can do is learn a bunch of weird, random, crazy spells that are overpowered and situational. And then the Masked Carnival is basically a series of puzzle fights where you have to figure out exactly which spells you need to put in your deck and how to use them in order to get past them. So I got through all the Masked Carnival stages at this point.
Yeah, I wasn't really digging watching you do those. Those weren't great.
I mean, the music's not great.
Yeah,
that
was the biggest problem. Also,
and the outfit's not great.
Real clownish.
Yeah.
So, I have a confession. So, the three of us here at this table, you know, we each have our own, like, you know, video game husbandos, waifus.
No.
There's another one I need to add to the list.
Oh, God.
His name is Sir Emmerich from Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah,
Sir Emmerich.
Yeah.
He's stolen a lot of hearts.
Yeah.
All right, come here, Google.
So we're all really sick of that.
You will not be shocked to learn that Sir Emmerich is a tall, pretty anime boy elf who wields a sword in combat.
So
I hate the fact that I type Sir S-I-R and it's not Sir, S-E-R.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then I typed Emmerich in the most sensible way I could. And instead it's A-Y-M-E-R-I-C. Now let's see his face.
Well, the reason Zach brings this up
is... It's Spock, for God's sake.
It is not Spock.
Spock and Link had a love child.
It's Dark Link.
Is it?
The reason Zach's making fun of him being a tall elf is because Link is my number one video game husbando.
And I know Link is really short, but I think you would
he's
like...
He's not short.
Yeah, he is.
No, he's not.
He's canonically short.
No, he's not.
And I think you would like Link even more if Link were a little taller.
This guy has sleepy eyes.
He doesn't have sleepy eyes. He has sharp...
This
sharp
guy
eyes.
Sucks.
He doesn't suck.
He doesn't have sharp eyes. He has bedroom eyes.
He doesn't have bedroom eyes.
Yeah, bedroom if you mean going to take a nap.
You were about to say dump, weren't you?
Well, that's a different kind of sleepy. That's a lot of straining sleepy. That's tired.
Tired?
That's worn out. That's I had some questionable Mexican food. I can say that because I'm Mexican.
Well.
Anyway, so.
Maybe that'll be one of our future episodes, just talking about our video game dreams, loves.
Anyway, speaking of, I'm sure if Angela here were to play the great Ace Attorney, there'd be one or two new husbandos added to the list.
Really?
That's what
really?
I've been playing.
Okay.
So it's very good. For those who don't know, it's a prequel to the Ace Attorney games. Both of these entries were on 3DS in Japan and did not come to the US, which infuriated many people. So Konami doesn't actually make games anymore. Capcom went ahead and finally localized it, but they turned it into a Switch game. So I have not extensively looked at the 3DS versions of these games, but all I know is this version of them is beautiful. Like, they did a really good job of upscaling everything. Some of the geometry of, like, I don't know, like a sleeve you might see is, like, kind of squared off in spots. But other than, like, that kind of thing, I actually honestly don't know if I would be hesitant if somebody were to tell me this was just made for Switch. Like, it looks really good.
Do you know if it was, like AI upscaled versus redrawn or...
I really don't know. I mean, I'd be tempted to say it was redrawn other than maybe some of the slight awkward renderings.
Sometimes it's like done by AI or some procedural method and then touched up by hand. So yeah, that's an option too.
But it's pretty cool because this means, with the exception of, I think it's Ace Attorney Investigations. I'm forgetting the name of the spinoff. It's the one where you run around as Edgeworth. There's only one game in the series that hasn't been localized, and it's that one game starring Edgeworth. But otherwise, the whole thing is now in English.
Oh, yeah, because there were two Edgeworth games, right?
Yes, it's the second one that they didn't bring here. I was also happy that it was a physical copy, so that was nice. And then what else happened?
Zach rolls his eyes at this, but I'm with Robert. I prefer being able to have physical copies.
Oh, yeah. Physical media till death.
Yeah.
Anyway, that could be its own podcast. What else have I been like? Oh, so shout out to Tecmo, to Koei Tecmo. Took a little longer to get through Ninja Gaiden for our review. I'm actually kind of glad I waited because they did at least one or two updates that made it perform better on Switch. Mm. So that was one of the complaints when the game first came out, was that it wasn't running super great on Switch. I know Nintendo Life was griping about it. I finally played it, and after whatever updates they did, I thought it ran fine. My only gripe was with the third game. I actually think that of all three games, the newest one is the one that looks kind of the roughest visually. But they all perform well, as far as I'm concerned, and are incredibly fun. I'm glad that Nintendo fans can finally play all three games, because the only one that they've had up until that point was 3 on Wii U. So that was a nice return. I kept getting my butt kicked by the first boss, which Zach may or may not have witnessed. Other than that, though, yeah, very good.
Do you have a preference between them, or you think you need to spend more time with them to come to a conclusion?
I need to spend a little bit more time. But before I forget and we move on to the topic of the day, after a year of waiting, all of my Shantae stuff from Limited Run Games came in. So I had a trip to make this past weekend, and the box came in the mail that Friday. And so, like, as I was walking out, it was like, I saw it there. I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, I know what this is. So I ripped it open and, like, quickly rifled through to grab the steelbooks and the games. And I got the games that I still had from previous installments. And I put them all together into the sleeve that it came with that I ordered, too. So shout out to Limited Run Games. They did a really good job with all of the Shantae's. Especially the reproduction Game Boy Color cartridges that they made.
I hope you can both appreciate I got through that without rolling my eyes.
You're going to roll your eyes when you realize that I bought both versions of the Game Boy Color set, like the standard and the limited, purely because the standard edition came with a different color cartridge than the limited. So I was like, oh, I'm like, I have to have both of the colors.
How much did that cost you?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay.
It was during the wild and crazy days of lockdown. Money was an object. Yes.
So we're here today to talk about not Robert's perhaps over heavily foreshadowed destitution.
Bury me with my shunt.
But rather, this month is the 30th anniversary of the Super Nintendo, or more accurately, the Super Famicom. No, I was right the first time. The Super Nintendo. The U.S. release of the Super Nintendo was 30 years ago this month. So as with the Game Boy Advance earlier this year, we just want to, you know, talk about that system, talk about games we like, and et cetera, et cetera. Go through it all.
Well, this is exciting for me because I have come to the conclusion in recent years that the Super Nintendo is my favorite console of all time. It definitely has many of my favorite games. I mean, my favorite game of all time is Ocarina of Time, followed by Majora's Mask. But with, you know, those exceptions aside, so many of my favorite games are from the Super Nintendo. This is very exciting.
Robert, any opening comments or remarks?
Super Nintendo's trash. I never liked it.
Cool. It sounds like we got a nice range of opinions here. So it should drive some interesting conversations. I will say when we started off the Game Boy Advance episode, we started with kind of a conversation about maybe what the Game Boy Advance represented or what it meant or how to frame the conversation, essentially. Mm-hmm. And with the Game Boy Advance, we talked about it being kind of like the last bastion of 2D gaming, of offline gaming, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So my question to you off the bat is, how do you think of the Super Nintendo and its legacy, its role in the firmament of video game greats?
I actually kind of feel like the Super Nintendo doesn't get enough love. I think that we've seen it get some more love recently, you know, with the release of things like the, you know, the Super Nintendo Mini. But I don't know, I always felt like the nostalgia, the love was always on, you know, like the NES. That's what seems like when Nintendo gets nostalgic, they immediately go to the NES. Don't really, for whatever reason, go to the Super Nintendo. I mean, even things like Mario World, I feel like they are very reluctant to look back on some of those titles. Like, I don't think we've seen Mario riding Yoshi with the cape since Mario World.
I don't think he's had the cape since then.
Yeah.
That's the one they've never brought back.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
And it's very odd. But just generally speaking, I feel like it doesn't get as much love. Although, interestingly, maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that, all of a sudden, this might have actually coincided with the launch of the Super Nintendo Mini. I'm trying to remember. But Nintendo suddenly started showing it more love. And I remember, like, of all the things, they did a collaboration with Forever 21. And they did it. It was specifically a Super Nintendo collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I got a bunch of the pieces from that collection. But they had like Mario World and Mario Kart and A Link to the Past clothing. It was really unexpected. And like I said, I would have thought maybe they would have just done kind of, you know, your milquetoast kind of, you know, Super Mario Bros. And maybe that was it from like the NES. But of all the things, they chose Super Nintendo. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I think a lot of the like the pixel art iconography from the NES is easier to use in a lot of contexts because it's so simple and recognizable in that way. Mm-hmm. But it is, I don't know, like I kind of, when you were saying this, I rolled around my head and I was a little skeptical. But I thought, like, you know, like the Game Boy Advance has a reputation as a portable Super Nintendo, right? Mm-hmm. But there are Famicom and NES skins for various Game Boys. Mm. And I don't think there's any kind of Super Nintendo version of Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, I guess not.
Which is a little weird.
They did the Super Nintendo, not skin, but design for 3DS.
Yeah.
But I think that was about it.
It took them a while to get there.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it, like, I think that if, you know, if it comes to like fans and media people, that there's probably plenty of love for Super Nintendo, but in terms of the love Nintendo shows, I would agree with Angela. Yeah, I think part of it
that's really what I was getting at.
I think part of it is that it's easier, to Zach's point, it's easier to recreate that, the visuals, like, you know, in terms of the pixel art, it's so simple and, you know, iconic. I also think that Nintendo probably looks at it like, well, if we're going to port something, it don't get any easier than porting these 8-bit games. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the 16-bit games can't be that much harder, but there must be enough of a difference that they just figure, well, when people think of Nintendo, and you're talking just the average person on the street, they think of NES. I feel like even though Super Nintendo had its own massive legacy and sold in big numbers, in terms of just like that lightning bolt moment, NES is what is going to be just burned into people's heads. Mm-hmm. And so Nintendo is smart in the sense that they want to make money. That's what's going to make them money, is focusing on those NES games and iconography. But as time has continued to roll by, SNES is arguably just as iconic. And there's many of us who remember it as the thing we played growing up, more so than even the NES. Like, I remember playing NES, but I was already at the probably midpoint of the lifespan of that system when we actually were, like, starting to play, because I was born in 86. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been playing since I was 4 or something. So my memories are stronger for Super Nintendo games. It's like, you know, you get older, you remember things better. So that was more truly my era. And those games have a really big place in you know, in my love of video games. And it's a shame that Nintendo is kind of lax in preserving those games and promoting them. I mean, like, if you look at what they do to N64, I mean, it's a travesty. But mm-hmm. Super Nintendo is not that much far behind in neglect.
The other thing, too, is Super Nintendo had a lot of licensed games that will probably never see the light of day again. Unless, yep. you know, you're a, how do they call that?
No, a rebel.
Better. Yeah, a rebel. I was trying to think of a
ROM pirate.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. But yeah, I mean, you know, one of my very favorite games is Tournament Fighters.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Tournament Fighters.
Yeah, and between that being, you know, having the TMNT license, it being developed by Konami, I don't think we're ever going to see a re-release of that game.
Yeah.
And it's really tragic. And there's a lot of stuff like that on the Super Nintendo.
I can't believe they're making action figures based mm-hmm. on the game. I think it's Super 8 that's making them. The shark character.
Armageddon.
Yep. Although they call them Armagon in the action figure, so I don't know who's right when it comes
to that. Actually, maybe that is right. I think that's it.
Yeah, I don't think it's Armageddon.
I don't think it's Armageddon. It is Armagon.
But yeah, I agree. You know, the licensed games of the Super Nintendo era, a lot of them are really genuinely good games, and you'll likely never see them. Mm-hmm. Never.
Yeah.
Because it's so mm-hmm. complicated, and studios that are gone. Mm-hmm.
There are similar casualties on the NES, like the Sunsoft Batman game
yep.
is a classic. Mm-hmm. We did get to see re-releases of the Disney Afternoon Capcom games, which mm-hmm. Would have been a similar risk, right? But yeah, I think there are more of these in the Super Nintendo era.
It's like really unique stuff like Cool Spot. I remember playing a lot of Cool Spot.
I love that game. I don't care what Zach says.
Yeah, Cool Spot's, it's really interesting. You're like, you know, movie tie-ins like Home Alone or Aladdin. Those were really fun.
Our aunt would buy all of the Warner Brothers Looney Tune cartoon games for Super Nintendo, and she would pick them up in these random places. I feel like she would get a lot of those at Suncoast,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we'd end up getting some of these from like rental places that were selling them, like Blockbuster. They would, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering that they would sometimes sell some of the stock that they had there after a certain point. But yeah, our Aunt Linda would show up with all sorts of stuff, like the Marvin Martian game, Bugs Bunny, the Tasmanian Devil game is another one I remember strongly, Roadrunner. Yeah, you know, it was quite an era for those games, because like, I think part of it is that it's a lot different than it is now, where, you know, everyone's making stuff, like the more experimental stuff's coming from the indie community, and the established guys are not really making this licensed stuff as much anymore. Or if they do, it's very like Fortnite's doing licensed material, but it's within the Fortnite framework. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you look at the Superman Returns game, I believe Blizzard made that. And so it's hilarious thinking Blizzard would probably never make a licensed game now, but you know, 20, 30 years ago they did.
Well, back then, as now, it was not what the developers really wanted to be doing, right?
It's all about getting that influx of cash.
Yeah.
We're making this game so we can turn around and make the game we want to afterwards.
So the companies that make these are like second stringers, like I don't know, Traveler's Tales or WayForward or things
WayForward
like that.
WayForward is exactly WayForward. What they do. They do the licensed games and then they'll make Ashante.
Yeah.
I don't know if Traveler's Tales makes licensed games. It's just that's about the regard I hold them in. So
Oh my god.
I remember things like
Maximum Carnage.
Well, yeah, Maximum mm-hmm. Carnage is another one, and Separation Anxiety wasn't great. Maximum Carnage is another one of my very favorite games. A game I didn't personally care for, but I remember Robert playing it a lot. It was Earthworm Jim. Such a strange game. So eerie and like fever dream-like, but so interesting. Another
irreverent.
Yeah, it's another example of those weird... Wasn't there... A tick game?
Yeah, it was the tick game. Yeah, it was a very generic brawler, but I used to like it.
Yeah, the tick game. And then, of course, I don't know what made our aunt pick up Mega Man X, but I'm really glad that she did. It's probably one of my most played games. I will just just even though I've never been able to beat Sigma, I still can't beat Sigma at 30 years old. But
you can do it. If I can beat Ninja Gaiden and Mike Tyson's Punch Out at 40, you can beat Mega Man X at 30.
Yeah, but you know, I've gotten all the way to like the spider, and I think that's about where I tap out. But
I think that's the hardest part of the game because you have really small window to react.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that game, it's one of my very favorite games, but I played it just over and over again. And
I remember Mega Man X, she picked up during summer vacation, but I can't remember the reason why. It had to have probably been Nintendo Power. That's what I'm thinking.
That.
Because I believe I asked for Mega Man X, but I was so young, I can't totally remember. But we talked about this a little bit previously in other episodes of the podcast, but the idea of how your memories of like playing games are often intertwined with like other things. Mm-hmm. So like for me, Ocarina of Time is forever mixed with Depeche Mode's Violator album, because I would put it on to get through the parts that would scare me, like getting through the first part of the Deku Tree where the giant skulls are hanging. But I've come to realize that when I think of Super Nintendo, like I have a lot of just like memories of life tangled with it. Like Angela was taking her first steps in our grandma's house in the dining room while I was playing Mario World. I remember him being in one of the tiny castles. Mm-hmm. It was one of the ones where you're in water in the castle, and mm-hmm. I'm floating, and I can hear everyone in the dining room going, "Oh, she's walking!" but like a lot of summer vacation, because that's where we would spend it, was with our grandma at her house, and our aunt had the Super Nintendo there. Mm-hmm. And just all those games, a lot of them, it's just memories of being there, fast food, the Flintstones Happy Meals. For some reason, that stands out in my brain. That was a big deal when they came out. I think of Batman Forever, that game, but also just like how that was a big deal at the time. Mm-hmm. The soap operas that our grandma would watch, like in the background as like we're playing, we can hear them in the kitchen. And
I actually have a lot of memories of... because the console of the moment would be set up in our aunt's room, and then the older consoles would be in grandma's room. So I remember a lot, like spending a lot of time playing the Super Nintendo in grandma's room while Robert was playing the N64 and then later the GameCube in our aunt's room. And so I just have a lot of memories tied to like sitting on the floor or sitting on the edge of grandma's bed playing the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. I have a lot of memories mixed up with the Super Nintendo. I started with the NES. I didn't come in for the NES right on the ground floor. I knew some people who had like the really old NES games like tennis and baseball, mm-hmm. and thinking like, well, those aren't very good. but I came in, you know, like 87, 88 and got really into Nintendo games, and then got in like on the ground floor with the Super Nintendo. My whole family was excited for it. When I think about like the Super Nintendo, for me, that more than any other console, even though I like elements of the NES era, like last week with the Metroid episode, we talked about kind of the strange, unsettling or alien atmosphere mm-hmm. that a lot of NES games have. Mm-hmm. And I like the kind of simple but demanding mechanics of a lot of NES games. Mm-hmm. But for the Super Nintendo era, I really think of that as like, if you're going to pick a single golden age of gaming, mm-hmm. it's that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of titles on that system, which are not just great games, but really set the template for like whole subgenres after that, like Link to the Past, mm-hmm. Super Metroid, Final Fantasy IV. These all became just templates for tons of games to follow in their own series and beyond.
Yeah. Mega Man X. Look at how many X games came after that one. And
well, I think too, Zach's talking about just like the influence on everything,
like the game game design. I mean, like
Super Metroid has like that led to basically Symphony of the Night, mm-hmm. and between those two games, then it's the explosion of the Metroidvania.
Yeah, Link to the Past and the structure of multiple dungeons with a boss.
Yeah, when people talk about like Darksiders being like Zelda, structured like Zelda, like what they mean is structured like Link to the Past and the games after that.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time playing Mario All-Stars, and I actually prefer the art style especially for Mario 3 in All-Stars, as opposed to the original art style for Mario 3 on the NES. We do not have the version that has Mario World. We have the first version
But you had a separate Mario World, right? Yeah. You weren't like frozen out of getting to play Mario World.
Oh, no. But we just didn't have the All-Stars version that has Mario World on it. Yeah. I actually kind of prefer that. I kind of like that we don't. But
simpler. Cleaner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Mario World is my favorite Mario game. And man, I spent so much time with Mario World. Yeah. But, I mean, just thinking back to all these games, like, what is that called? Tetris Attack. I was thinking about that while you were talking. I actually forgot about that. We played a ton of Tetris Attack and had really good music, although some of it was a little depressing for me. But it had, like, really good music and, like, really fun. And I like how, like, in the background of each frame, you've got, like, Yoshi on one side and it'll be, like, you know... I forget what the raven's name is, like the fat raven or the
Raphael the Raven.
Yeah, Raphael the Raven or the angry volcano with the angry eyebrows.
Yeah, like for those who don't know, Tetris Attack was just paneled upon, mm-hmm. but they took Yoshi's story because that was big at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island.
And reskinned it with that. There's actually, I believe, a story with the Tetris creator and... Alexei, I can never remember his last name.
That's okay.
And then Hank Rogers. I think Hank Rogers told them, yeah, sure, you can slap the name Tetris on it. We'll take some royalties, but like it's nothing like Tetris. And then paneled upon, who don't know that, it's a, what do they call it? Puzzle Challenge?
Pokemon Puzzle League.
That's what they call it.
N64. It's been given a bunch of different names.
So if you've ever played Puzzle League, Tetris Attack is what brought Puzzle League to America.
But... So, like, not only, for me, not only does the Super Nintendo era have a ton of, like, stone-cold classics that influenced a ton that came after, mm-hmm. kind of set the template for 2D gaming, it's still, like, visually the template for, like, a lot of the pixel art you see in indie games today. Mm-hmm. Although that's drifted a little in different styles. Yeah. But the other thing about the Super Nintendo era for me is that this is when, like, Nintendo's walled garden started to break down, kind of. Like, they had an almost... monopoly on the console market in the NES era, but this is also like the Super Nintendo era is when you started to have burgeoning internet, like message boards and things like that. You started getting like independent import game shops popping up, even Nintendo starting to run previews of games that ended up never coming out. And this is also when the Game Genie happened. So like all these things together created this constellation of temptations and interesting things beyond the realm of what Nintendo Power and what the aisles of Toys R Us specifically offered. And I think of like it's the Super Nintendo era of games in particular that seeded a lot of like what became GameFAQs or like online discussions of games, games that came out in Japan but didn't make it out in the US. Like that was most acutely felt in the Super Nintendo era when you had like Final Fantasy V, Seiken Densetsu III. There was a ton of the Tales of Phantasia, Romancing Saga. There's a ton of these. And this ends up like jumpstarting fan translation and like a lot of this kind of like more independent minded 90s into 2000s internet culture. Mm-hmm. So I think there's kind of like this, there's a bit of excitement around for me, and this is speaking partly nostalgia, but the Super Nintendo and realizing that there was this whole world of games that weren't coming out in the US, but that I could theoretically get my hands on. Mm-hmm. Like that led me to get my Super Nintendo modded because I was so excited. That led me to take Japanese classes when I was in middle school because I just really wanted to play Final Fantasy V. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo Power told me about it and then it never came out because Square decided we weren't cool enough for it.
It's interesting because to this day, there's still fans working on translations of Super Nintendo games, and you see online, oh, the fan translation of whatever is finally done, and you can download the patch and put it onto the game, and that is pretty cool, because it's like, it's still that era of accessibility in terms of, like, you could theoretically go make your own 2D SNES-level game, mm-hmm. and, like, being able to, like, hack into it and do whatever on your computer... that's a lot easier than getting into any... I mean, even from, like, the N64 era forward, it's harder compared to, like, the Super Nintendo era. Because we're talking about, like, fan translations where people are, like, you know, matching fonts and like correcting certain things to make it look as legit as possible. That's a lot easier to do in like a 2D pixel game versus anything else. Mm-hmm. That kind of homebrew mindset.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking about some of the most classic titles on the Super Nintendo that we actually didn't grow up with. Castlevania 4, Super Castlevania, Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Earthbound. We didn't have any of those growing up. It wasn't until we were adults, and Robert in particular, you know, was tracking down either the the cartridges, or different things came out, like the Game Boy Advance version of A Link to the Past, and different ways that you could experience these games.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, it's weird looking back, because I know for like Zach, because he's just a little older than us, there are games he played, like the Final Fantasy stuff, that we didn't play. Mm-hmm. Like, we're busy playing, you know, Mighty Max, because it came with one of the toys. Or, like, the Warner Brothers stuff, Animaniacs, mm-hmm. A lot of the licensed cartoon stuff. And part of that is because our aunt was the primary person buying these things. Mm-hmm. And so she would see stuff that she knew. Mm-hmm. You know, she knew Warner Brothers. She knew Disney. So she'd buy that stuff mm-hmm. because she would just want to see us play it. But then, as we progress, particularly me, because I'm older than Angela, you know, I'm getting older and I'm realizing there's things I want to play, specifically want to play. And I know that that's why we probably ended up getting Star Fox. Mm-hmm. Star Fox was a big deal when it came out. Mm-hmm. Super Mario RPG.
Oh, yeah.
That was another one that was a big deal because that came out kind of around the same time as when, like, the Donkey Kong Country games were coming out. Mm-hmm. And so it was as visually stunning to me, you know, to people of that era, is looking at like the pre-rendered Donkey Kong Country games. Like mm-hmm. that Mario RPG looked incredible. Mm-hmm. But then you throw in the really fun RPG mechanics and the funny storytelling, and that was a major standout. But then I'm like, so I played that classic. I didn't play Earthbound.
Yeah.
I didn't play, you know, Link to the Past. I had to come and discover them later.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. You know, you came around to them eventually, right? You were in the right headspace, right mood, and
mm-hmm. You know, one game that I spent a ton of time on was the licensed Power Rangers game. It was the first one. We also have the one from the movie, but I didn't care for that one as much.
It's not as good.
Yeah.
One of them is a 1v1 fighter, right? And one of them is like a side scroller.
No, there is the 1v1 fighter that you're talking about, but then there's the movie Power Ranger game, and then there's the television show Power game. There mm-hmm. were three.
Mm-hmm. So you're not talking... Okay, you're not talking about the 1v1.
No.
Ended up getting the 1v1.
Are you talking about the Sunsoft one?
I believe so. It's a side-scrolling brawler. But it was funny because, you know, I spent so much time with that game that I remember sound effects and I remember music. And it was either Robert or Zach who was playing... what's that ninja game on the Switch, that side-scrolling brawler?
The Ninja Warriors?
Yeah, Ninja Warriors.
Okay, it would have been Natsume then.
Yeah, so one of the two, he was playing that. And there were sound effects, like a ton of sound effects that were exactly the same as the Power Rangers game, and animations too. And I was like, were these made by the same people? Because I'm having these flashbacks of playing the Power Rangers game.
Yeah.
And it sounding the same. Some of these animations look the same, particularly the female ninja with the red suit and the blonde ponytail. The way that she does that kind of like midair somersault mm-hmm. is exactly the same animation as the Yellow Ranger in that game. And I think we determined they were made by the same people.
It would have been Natsume then.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting.
Cool.
Can
I ask a question?
Yeah.
Actually, can I ask three questions?
Mm.
Oh, no.
Can we kick off Maruho Trivia Challenge?
Oh, God.
That's not one of the three questions.
To hear us bumble our way through not knowing things.
No, I'm sure you know a bunch. I'm sure you know a bunch.
Just like a Band-Aid, let's get it over with.
Yeah. So, like before, your name is your buzzer.
Okay.
All right.
Shout out Ben Maller.
Just stop saying that, please.
Oh, but I like Ben Maller. What if one day he hears this?
All right. Number one. Just say your name when you know it. Beat-em-ups, Rival Turf, Brawl Brothers, and the Peacekeepers, despite their U.S. names, are a single series in Japan. What is the series?
Angela? Double Dragon?
That is not correct.
I can't remember. Is it like Bad Dudes or something stupid?
River City Ransom?
Also not correct. Also not correct. Bad Dudes is by Data East. River City Ransom is by Technos. Double Dragon is also by Technos.
Yep.
These three games are all by Jalico. Japanese name is Rushing Beat. They were Rushing Beat, Rushing Beat Run, and Rushing Beat Shura.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number two. Legendary composer Yuzo Koshiro, already famous for his work with Ys and Streets of Rage, composed the soundtrack for what early Super Nintendo game?
Streets of Rage guy.
And what was the other game?
Ys. Y-S.
Yeah.
I didn't know you did the Ys games.
At least the first two or three, I think.
Oh. An early
game. Can we get a hint? Is it another brawler?
It is not a brawler in the sense that Streets of Rage is a brawler, I'll tell you that, at least.
Huh. I don't know.
ActRaiser.
Oh, that guy's really good with music.
He is. He is. And on that note, number three, Chrono Trigger, often considered the best JRPG ever, was honored in the Olympics by having two music tracks played during the opening ceremonies.
It did.
What were they?
These questions that I'll never be able to answer. We have to work on the questions section for this.
Yeah.
I listened to the opener. I saw the opening ceremonies. I don't know what the songs
were. Well, you just hum a few words.
One of them was Frog's theme, right?
I was going to say, I just know that one of them was somebody's theme. Mm-hmm. That's all that I know.
Mm-hmm.
It was Frog, right?
That was one of them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Frog's theme.
I don't know the other.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty good, right? The other one was Robo's theme. They were both character themes.
Oh, they're both themes.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Good start. We'll come back to this.
Uh-huh. You know, speaking of music, I love Yoshi's Island, but that game has, I don't know what it is. Zach always laughs at me and he makes fun of me when I say this. Certain video game music I find slightly depressing, and that game has some songs that make me really depressed. I don't know what it is.
For me, it's Mario RPG soundtrack that has a bunch of songs that make me sad.
It's the end. Huh. Like Mario RPG soundtrack is stellar. It's one of the best ever. But it's the songs at the end of the game. Like, you know, you've beat Smithy and you're saying goodbye to Geno and all that. Just, I don't like listening to any of that. It just puts me in a really sad, depressive
mood. It's sad, but very beautiful.
No offense to the composer of Super Mario RPG, but I don't think I put that in my top 20 Super Nintendo soundtracks.
That's ridiculous.
Go to bed.
Oh my God.
My favorite track from Yoshi's Island, though, is, it's, I don't know what the song is called, but it's from a stage called Touch Fuzzy, Get Busy.
Is that?
Yeah. And then every time you hit one of the fuzzies, it's like,
yeah.
The first time I played that, I actually fell over laughing.
Yeah, some of the music on Super Nintendo is like it's some of the best stuff ever. I mean, there's going to be the people who talk about the Final Fantasy soundtracks, and I'm, you know, God bless you. You love what you love, but.
Thank you.
For me, it's Super Mario RPG, the Donkey Kong Country soundtracks, all three of them. I like the music in the third one, too, even though David Wise didn't do all of it. But Elena Fisher's work is good, too.
Don't care for
it. So Robert...
I'm not done.
This is just a sidebar about the Donkey Kong Country music. Mm-hmm. Robert sent us both like a list of his favorite Donkey Kong Country.
Right.
Okay, now hold on. No. You're not going to disparage me. You're not going to besmirch me.
I'm not
besmirching you. You're not going to twist facts.
No, you sent us...
I agreed with the music that was selected by Angela, but I said these are songs she didn't include, and so I included some of the music from Donkey Kong Country 3 that was omitted.
And they were almost all duds.
Yeah. Amazing.
The drop-off in quality between the first two games and the third is...
Yeah, because I remember the three of us were sharing our lists of our favorite Donkey Kong Country tracks. All of mine came from the first two games. And it's true, Robert did agree that he liked all the ones that I chose, but then he was like, but you know, you're missing these. But then Zach and I went through and looked up each one on YouTube, and we were just like, dud, dud, dud.
Wrong. Okay. So,
we weren't fans.
Anyway, so the Donkey Kong Country games, you know, Mario World, you gotta throw that in there. A lot of the music in, Link to the Past is really good, clearly, but a dark horse for me is the Mario Kart soundtrack. I think Super Mario Kart has a really clever soundtrack. It's very super good.
Yeah, that same composer also did SimCity for the Super Nintendo.
That wasn't Koji?
No. Soyaoka or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I agree with the first Mario Kart soundtrack is really good. And in particular, I got a real soft spot for Koopa Beach.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Koopa Beach, the lake one. Does it Donut Lake? Is that what it is? I'm forgetting, but...
Hang on, there's Donut Pond?
No, I think it's Donut Lake. It's the one that is in Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of, though. It's hang on.
While she looks that up, Star Fox has an incredible soundtrack. Star Fox in particular, that soundtrack has this like really great like space sound to it. And it's all of this is being done on the kind of limited chipset of the Super Nintendo. Like, it's amazing.
Donut Planes. Yeah.
It's amazing, these composers. I mean, like, if you think of how limited the NES era was in terms of its sound capabilities and some of the great music that came from that period of time, you get to the Super Nintendo and it increases by quite a bit in terms of, like, possibility and the number of channels they could work on. And, man, they produced some of just incredible music. I mean, look at the Earthbound soundtrack. That has a lot of really good tunes,
Yeah,
too.
They went nuts with the, like, ability to, like, sample sounds on the Super Nintendo.
Me, tracks that I actively listen to regularly, or soundtracks, excuse me, from the Super Nintendo, other than some of the ones we've already named, Tournament Fighters, very underrated, and Mega Man X. I think every single track in that game I like.
All of
much.
The music in X is better than anything in X2 or X3. Mm-hmm. X3 even just has a completely different sound.
Agreed.
In terms of the music. And like, yeah, the first X, all those tracks are great.
Yeah, it's really solid. It's not my favorite Mega Man soundtrack, but on the of the Super Nintendo games, I think it's it's an easy winner.
Turtles in Time, I think, is another underappreciated soundtrack. That's a really good soundtrack.
This is Angela's reminder to bring up the few songs from that Marvel Superheroes game that you won't stop playing over and over.
Wow. Cannot believe I forgot this one. Yes. Totally one of my very favorite games. I think the official full title is Marvel Superheroes War of the Gems.
Mm-hmm.
I just call it War of the Gems.
Yeah, gems, not stones.
Yeah, no stones.
MCU trash.
Yeah, trash. No, it's War of the Gems.
Stones. It's gems.
War of the Gems. That is a fantastic game. It is incredibly fun. Zach doesn't get it, doesn't understand my love for it, but it also has a lot of good music.
It just seems to frustrate you when you play it.
Well, one, it gets to a certain point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I've never beaten it.
Yeah.
It gets difficult.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, I get past Magus, and then, you know, I'm in the second part where you go to, like, there's, like, Egypt and then the Arizona mining complex and... I can't remember some of the other second half of the game.
Well, while we're talking War of the Gems, let's not forget X-Men Mutant Apocalypse and its great soundtrack as well.
Is that one of the Capcom
games? Yeah. Psylocke stage is great.
I remember, playing Psylocke, and Gambit's in that one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there's the Spider-Man cartoon game soundtrack by Fletcher Beasley. I think that's well done as well.
It's a great name. Fletcher Beasley.
Yeah. You wonder where some of these guys are. I bet plenty of them are in the industry, but plenty probably. It's like, yeah, I did a couple of game soundtracks and then I got a real job.
Yeah.
They gave me $5 for it. You know, it's a different world back then. Yeah. You make some video game music? I think so. Here's $20.
Either you ever, like back in the era of CDs or whatever, either you ever buy like a video game soundtrack?
So... Angela's gotten some, like, we would go to Japantown in San Francisco, but this is more around, like, the GameCube era.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we would get CDs that Nintendo Power would send out at random. So, like, we have a Smash Bros. Symphony CD that they sent us that is just full of great music.
It's incredible. That is incredible.
But, no, not actively seeking out some of these. Like, I know Japan, pretty much all these music, or all these soundtracks have their own CDs. Like, I know it's like, you know, the sound version is what they'll call some of these soundtracks.
OSV, original sound version.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't have the Final Fantasy VI soundtrack myself, but I remember that one actually being advertised, like, maybe in Nintendo Power or at least in other, like, actual U.S. contexts. You didn't have to go to just, like, Japantown for that one. And then I ordered some soundtracks separately. But, yeah, I feel like the Super Nintendo was the first system where... at least in the West, appreciation for games music was starting to bubble through.
Always slow here to catch up. I remember Nintendo Power, this is a little later in the N64 era, they had the soundtrack CDs that were shaped like the character heads. It's like the CD mm-hmm. itself wasn't round, it was mm-hmm. actually shaped, you know, like whoever. That's pretty cool.
Am I mistaken? Do we have a Kirby game on the Super Nintendo? I mean, obviously I know there is a Kirby, there are...
We never got any of the Kirby games on Super Nintendo when we were kids. Yeah. So no Kirby Superstar Ultra, Kirby's Dream Land 3.
Yeah, because those
golf game.
You can add those to games that we experienced as adults.
Yep.
And didn't have growing up.
That's why I love Virtual Console, because mm-hmm. they put out a bunch of these Super Nintendo games, and I was like, oh, I never played Pilot Wings. I never played this or that.
It was funny though. I remember playing a lot of Kirby on the Game Boy.
Yeah.
I wonder why we didn't get it on the Super Nintendo.
I don't know. Well, like I said, you know, well, part of it was I never asked for Kirby. Mm. Our Aunt Brenda randomly just gave me a copy of Kirby.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I found Kirby and loved it. But I don't think my child brain realized Kirby was on Super Nintendo.
Oh, well, thank you.
I don't know.
Thank you, Brenda.
Yeah. Like, as a child, like, I think you exist in this, like, fever state until a certain point, and then your brain starts to actually have thoughts. And so when I started to have thoughts, that's around, like, you know, Mario RPG, Donkey Kong Country era. But, like, I think Superstar, whatever it is, Superstar Ultra was already out. You know, I don't even know. Huh. But, yeah.
Neither of you mentioned Castlevania IV's music specifically, am I right?
Oh, no, not specifically. But, yeah, that game has a ton of really good tracks. Can't remember.
It's definitely not my favorite Castlevania game, but like the atmosphere is really cool, really moody, and the music's a big part of it.
Yeah, like the first four levels or so that I can remember, those tracks just back to back to back to back are really, really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've always had a soft spot for the soundtrack of UN Squadron, which is it's by Capcom. It's got some, as you would expect from Capcom, given like Mega Man X and Street Fighter. It has some kind of cheesy guitar samples, but it's really good. And it's kind of like there's almost like a weird edge of melancholy to the music in UN Squadron, which I think really suits it.
I think it's kind of sad when you look at the state of like contemporary game development, where first of all, if it's pixel art, it's almost always, you know, NES style pixel art. And I'm not saying I don't like that, and it's easier to make, obviously, but like, I feel like you don't see as many people going for, like, the SNES Genesis aesthetic. It's starting to see it a little more.
I think you see plenty of it, frankly.
It's not exactly accurate, like, though. It's either super simple 8-bit or, like, really, like, intricate pixel art, but it's above what you would have seen in the SNES era.
Yeah, but, I mean, by that token, like, very little, like, quote, 8-bit retro indie games actually have anything approaching faithful NES graphics. You get like Shovel Knight, Panzer Paladin, and not much else.
I wish there'd be more of like an authentic push in terms of like that SNES era, and like even the music too. Like, you know, it's sad because you can't really ever truly recreate those eras when something was created in, because it's like the sort of music that was made.
Look at Maximum Carnage. That game, everything about it is 100% a product of the era.
Yeah, totally 90s.
Yeah, like, you know, Robert was telling me the band who did the music for that game.
Green Jello.
Here's the thing. I've gone my entire life thinking it was Green Jelly. Because I think that's how it's spelled, right?
But, well, it has the umlaut over it.
Because you told me, didn't you tell me that they wanted to be called Green, or they want to call themselves Green Jello?
Green Jello, and then the Jello people were like, you can't call ourselves that.
Yeah.
So like, all right, we'll do the Y with the umlaut, which is pronounced as an O.
So that's extremely interesting. But, I mean, you know, that style of rock and that particular sound, I mean, even in music today, really people either don't or can't, I don't know what it is, create that particular guitar sound that was really big in the 90s. But I mean, everything about it, I mean, the art style of Spider-Man at the time combined with, you know, that particular style of like alternative rock, all comes together in this 90s extreme, not extreme, but X dash.
Yeah, I heard that when you said 90s.
And everything about it, it's like you can't, I mean, you could recreate it, but it really wouldn't feel authentic. It is authentic with Maximum Carnage, well, which is another game that has a very solid soundtrack.
Well, part of it is resistance to do it. Like, yeah. Jim Lee on his Instagram page, he posted the art that he did for Blackheart, I think is the game. And it's that character with the long hair.
Blackheart used to scare me in War of the Gems.
Is that the game? Is that the name I'm thinking of, Zach?
It's not a
It's that
game.
big alien thing, right? With the
no,
big long...
this dude, he looks like a Native American. He has like the blue vest.
Oh, I know.
And...
Are you thinking Blackthorn?
Yes, Blackthorn.
No, I'm thinking Blackheart,
so,
the alien thing.
Jim Lee posted the art he did for that, and he kind of laughed. It was like, it was the 90s. And it's like, well, who cares, dude? Like, and I'm not saying that's like the coolest character ever, but like, to branch out a little bit, if you look at Jim Lee's 90s designs for the X-Men, and if you grew up with the X-Men cartoon in particular, that's what they pulled from, was Jim Lee's designs. They're so damn cool. I don't care if they were 90s extreme. They look awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what Marvel does, like in terms of Marvel Comics, they do these variant covers, like insanely, like they do just tons of them each month for each series. They have one artist named J. Scott Campbell, who they keep getting to do X-Men covers. And every time he's doing these covers, he's doing the 90s era X-Men, and they look hella cool. And it's just like, so why aren't they just in these costumes now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're selling these variant covers. You know people like it. If they didn't, you wouldn't do the variants. It's like, mm-hmm. just put them in the suits. They look cool. But, like, there's this resistance to go back to certain eras mixed with the fact that it's kind of hard to just get into that mindset again.
It's just so weird. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, Gambit and Rogue, Bishop. What's Bishop's contemporary? The other guy?
Cable.
Deadpool, all these different characters from the 90s that had these really cool styles. It didn't matter that they were over the top. And in fact, in some cases, like with Rogue and Gambit, I actually think they have a really interesting kind of sleek design that I feel is pretty underappreciated, except for Rogue. I feel like maybe most people probably like that look for Rogue. But a lot of 90s style is underappreciated. And then I think of, like, you know, Cape Mario. The entire Star Fox team and the way that they look and are styled, Mega Man X, like many of my favorite looks or designs, Link from Ocarina of Time, and Young Link, all these designs are from the 90s, and I just feel like that was like really where they peaked.
I feel like a lot of these designs are not that great, and I don't think...
Well, see, Zach's a 90s hater.
That's not true.
Yeah.
I'll make a carve out for Rogue. I do think Rogue's 90s outfit is really good. Like the, mm-hmm. I mean, this is not unique to Rogue, but like the spandex with just like a loose jacket over
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I think it really works for Rogue.
Those yeah. boots, mm-hmm. she looks super cool.
Yeah, she looks cool.
Doesn't Gambit have like weird like silver greaves on his legs?
Well, they're blue, but yeah, he has a little metal boot.
Okay, yeah.
Gambit.
I don't know, he's on the list.
On the list.
Yeah. All right, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Or should I say...
Oh, come on.
Should I say Maruho Trivia Challenge?
Get it over with.
Yeah. Round two. Okay.
Hear us know nothing.
So, as a reminder, so far Robert has half a point, and Angela is... just on his heels at 0 points. Okay.
Yeah.
Number four, the Mystery Dungeon roguelike series not only includes some licensed titles like for Pokemon mm-hmm. and the Final Fantasy Chocobo, but actually started as a spinoff of another IP. What is the name of that game, or at least the IP?
Oh, what did Mystery Dungeon spin out of? Robert?
Yeah.
Was it Final Fantasy?
It was not.
Okay.
Hang on. Let me think about this. I don't know.
Would you like a hint?
I'm just going to throw out a guess. I don't think it's even right at all.
Yeah.
Castlevania.
That is incorrect.
Castlevania.
It is Dragon Quest, the first Mystery Dungeon game. Toruneko no Daiboken was starring Toruneko, a.k.a. Taloon, from Dragon Warrior 4.
Well,
Dragon Quest 4.
Not a fan.
Number five. Arguably the most infamous Super Nintendo box art prominently features a confused old man playing a banjo, even though the game is a shmup.
What's
the game?
Oh, dang. I'm not going to get the name, I am familiar with this. Go ahead.
What is it?
Phalanx.
Yes.
The Phalanx?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that game.
Some of the art for the... Oh, my God. We'll get to that in a minute, but... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Number six, Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, and Shaquille O'Neal all star in cult classic Super Nintendo games. What are those games, and what genre are those games in?
Well, I know there's Shaq Fu, so that's a that's a fighter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was Barkley in?
That's the question. Barkley, Shut Up and Jam.
Oh, okay.
Which is a basketball game.
Okay.
Was there some kind of Space Jam tie-in?
Mm-mm.
No? That's kind of shocking. They never did a Space Jam game?
Yeah. Huh. So I don't know which one Michael Jordan was in.
It's called Michael Jordan, Chaos in the Windy City.
Oh, I remember that name. What was that game?
It is a kind of not very good looking action platformer.
Oh, man. Amazing. I forgot about that one. Yep.
Cool.
So I'm at a point because I got Shaq Fu.
Yeah.
No, that would be a third of a point.
So I'm at 0.75% of a point?
No, you're at 0.83.
That seems arbitrary. Mm. Anyway.
Angela's still hot on his heels.
Oh, my God. So anyway, I never got the mouse. I didn't get, like, I never played.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I will forget if I don't say it now. Mario's Time Machine.
I was about to mention those.
Okay, go ahead then. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I was going to say, you know, the peripherals, I don't think we ever really got. We never got the SNES mouse and mouse pad. I got Mario Paint at an antique store, like, 5 or 6 years ago. Never played SimCity on the Super Nintendo. Never got the Super Scope. I would still like to play, but, you know, it's my understanding that you can't play anything with the infrared on a flat screen. You have to actually play that on a tube if you want to play
it. Yeah, there's a special peripheral. Like, somebody made a gun that works on
the flat screens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be worth getting, but it would be nice to play it on a tube.
I did play the Super Scope games back in the day. My friend Scott had...
Were they good?
Yeah. So it comes
Yoshi Safari, right?
That wasn't great. There was like a six-pack of games. I don't remember what it was called. Like, there's a cartridge with, like, kind of, like, a bunch of different games that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that one where there's a bunch of missiles flying by and you have to try and shoot down the missiles. The game that I think actually does hold up, that actually is really cool, is called Battle Clash, which is a robot combat game. Your character, you're supposed to be inside the cockpit of a robot, and like there's another like robot that's like darting around, and you're trying to fight each other. So you're like blowing off parts of the robot's armor.
That's pretty cool.
And there's a sequel to that called like Falcon's Revenge, I think, that never came out in the US. But Battle Clash was pretty cool. And even like even if you just play that emulated with a mouse, which is obviously not the ideal way to play, it's still good. It's like a well designed game.
And then, you know, to Angela's point, so then there's the edutainment games, right? The educational video games. And we had both Where's Mario or Mario's Missing and Mario's Time Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we sunk so many hours into that game. And I don't think I actually knew any of the answers to any of the questions. It was always just trial and error.
Yeah, I did not actually learn how to play either of those games until I was an adult. I remember, to Robert's point, I think it was with Mario's Time Machine where I was just punching in like dates and places and would eventually get something right in order to move forward. Mario is Missing. I don't even remember. It had to have been just trial and error, like Robert said, as a child.
Those games are so trippy. Like, anybody who's never played them, I don't believe they're developed by Nintendo at all, but they license these characters and they're 2D platformers, but like you're not jumping on enemies like in a normal Mario game. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going around and you're answering questions where you're like, I remember Mario's Time Machine a little more clearly, where like you are going into different periods of history, and in that one you are playing as Mario, and so Mario's walking up to these historical figures and people, and they'll give you bits of info, and then you use that to answer questions, and that's how you proceed. Like, I swear, so trippy.
I think I remember talking to one of the founding fathers.
I think you talk to Newton at some point.
Yeah, I think you do talk to Newton at some point. In that game. And then
Mario's Missing, though, that game I really loved because you played as Luigi.
And
that was enough for me.
What's interesting, too, is that because of the era, the sprites they used are from Mario World. So it's Mario and Luigi's sprites from Mario World.
Yep. Some of their best looks.
Yeah. And then, like, I remember, like, I think maybe it's Mario is Missing I think you're walking through San Francisco or something.
Yeah, you do go through San Francisco at one point.
Yeah, and then like it's kind of weird because it's, if you don't know where you're going, you're basically kind of going in a big giant circle. Like you can talk to people and they have this really like generic kind of NPC look.
Yeah, nothing matches the sprites of Mario and Luigi.
Nothing at all.
The guys who made the game were just like, oh, nothing needs to match. Like, Nintendo let us copy and paste these two sprites. That's all anybody cares
about.
Yeah,
you want Mario and Luigi to look special, right? You want them to look...
Yes.
Yeah.
And then,
in a normal world. That's the whole point of a game like that.
I don't remember which one it is. It might be Mario's time machine. But you're like, yeah, because you're playing as Mario. He's like surfing.
Remember yeah, you're like so surfing? Like that one, you have to like gather mushrooms and then you... Go into like a whirlpool or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, go into the whirlpool. It's so weird, and I don't.
Those games are so bizarre.
Yeah,
and
but
yeah, it's,
I'm really glad we have. I mean, I'm glad we have all of our games that we grew up with, but those in particular.
It's kind of heartbreaking now when you go anywhere that sells video games. Like as time keeps going by, these older games just keep getting more and more and more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a Half Price Books. They had some GameCube games where they wanted like. $100, $200 for them. And I'm like, well, you know, we have these, but it just makes you think, man, I ever lose one of these or some a-hole comes in and steals them. Like, if I ever want to replace them, it's going to be almost impossible. And like the Super Nintendo games, it's similar. You know, it's like you have these games that are, you know, worth a lot of money and it's gone from like, I really love my collection. So like kind of looking at it and just thinking, oh God, if anything ever happens to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's unavoidable. Right. Like things degrade over time. The market for games has increased over time. So you get like more people that are interested. Look, Dolphin will always be there. SNES 9X will always be there. Like what's at stake is you having a physical copy, not whether you can play the game. That's the point I'm making. Like
that physical copy is what matters the most.
No, it's not. The experience of play is what matters the most.
So I've said this before. But one of my biggest game splurges, I had just lost the job. It was a temporary position with the Internal Revenue Service.
You don't have to embarrass yourself again. Like, you spent like $200 on a copy of Earthbound.
Yes, I did.
I know.
It was great.
It wasn't
great. I
remember
going to the Alameda Game Exchange. I was just like, I'm spoiling myself. And it was either going to be Chrono or it was going to be Earthbound. I was like, I'll go with Earthbound. Yeah.
Chrono Trigger is another one we didn't have growing up. I actually don't know if we even have that. Cartridge now. I have it on the DS.
Yeah, I got the Virtual Console one. I have the DS one, but still don't have the cartridge. One day soon.
You know, you got other things you should be spending your money on. Everyone's got other things to spend their money
physical
on.
Physical media until death, Zach.
No, Robert, building a future for yourself
a future
and the people
with
you
physical
love first.
Games.
Anyhow.
You know, one... video game track that I feel really needs some recognition. I really like the Dark World track from A Link to the Past. There is something about that that is very, very, it's very Zelda, and it is very well done, and I just really wanted to say that. I just really wanted to recognize that song.
No, it's a good track.
I think it's personally like one of the like top Zelda tracks.
It was interesting for me going back to play A Link to the Past after playing Ocarina because you're like, oh, that music actually came from this game, not from Ocarina. Mm-hmm. Like Kakariko Village, that theme's from Link to the Past. It's not from Ocarina.
Mm-hmm. The Symphony of the Goddess
concert series, symphonic concert series,
they added music over the years. And one of the sets that they did was Link to the Past. And there were certain performances that got me emotional. But the Link to the Past one is beautiful. It is, I recommend it. It is very, very well done. Just go YouTube it or something.
I don't know about the two of you, but for me, when I think of like quintessential early 90s Super Nintendo games, like it's not a Nintendo made game, but Street Fighter 2, right? Like obviously it started in the arcade, but that was like a huge get for the Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have Street Fighter 2?
We had Tournament Fighters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, better game.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Like, it
no disrespect to Tournament Fighters. Like I back in the day, you know, I like Blockbuster was really big in my Super Nintendo routine. And if you would go to a Blockbuster, your understanding of what the Super Nintendo library was just way, way glutted with beat-em-ups, 1v1 fighting games, and mascot platformers, mm-hmm. just tons of them. And I rented a lot of them. And look, I'm not going to tell you that Tournament Fighters was as good as Street Fighter 2, because it certainly wasn't. But I did think it was one of the better ones. I think Killer Instinct might have been my favorite of like the non-Street Fighter.
Oh, Killer Instinct's pretty cool.
One of the non-Street Fighter fighting games.
We have Mortal Kombat, right?
Yeah, the SNES Mortal Kombat, yeah. the toned down one.
Although you can still do that fatality where you punch up and then that person, like your opponent, falls under the spikes. Because I remember doing that, but it was always an accident. But yeah, we at least had that.
Yeah, Street Fighter, I've tried to go back to Street Fighter 2, and it's fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had that firsthand experience of playing it when it was new. Because, like, I think people who play Smash Bros. Probably get this feeling, where it's like, if you've been playing Smash since the N64 days, or at least Melee,
mm-hmm.
man, I think that your competency, if you were like, you know, you kept up with it and you're good at it, by the time you get to Smash Ultimate, if you're somebody new trying to play with somebody who's played forever, man, that the difference in skill mm-hmm. can be, like, just so hard. Because I had a friend who, he'd been playing Street Fighter since, like, Street Fighter 2 days. And so by the time he got into games like Marvel vs. Capcom and all that, he had those muscle reflexes just down. And man, we played Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I think I lost 52 times in a row. We counted it. Like, I tried to beat him and just never, ever could.
Yeah, you just have to you put in the practice and lab it, right? You got to go into like the practice mode and get used to the motions and get used to, like, obviously it's an uphill battle.
I don't know
battle.
What it is. I have like a resistance to learning it. It's not that I don't want to. It's just that I think that because... Well, I think it's because I don't think I'll ever get good enough that I could be truly competitive with anyone. And like, I almost kind of feel like, why bother then? Like, I love playing those games. Like, I'll fight the computer, like, to get through like the story campaign for characters. Mm-hmm. But like, in terms of wanting to be able to compete... That's what those games are about, and I know I'm not good enough to compete, so I just feel stupid trying to, like, get better at it. I'm like, I'll just fight somebody in Smash. That's my fighting game.
So really quick, in honor of the Blockbuster version of the history of the Super Nintendo, what is your favorite mascot platformer, favorite beat-em-up, and favorite fighting game on the system?
Oh, you're going to have to say those things again. So go one at a time with each of us.
My favorite fighting game is Tournament Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, you said mascot platformer and brawler?
And yeah,
so mascot platformer, you mean something like Cool Spot or yeah. Buzz? But was Busby technically
Bugsby?
A mascot? Bugsby?
Busby or Bubsy?
Was he a mascot?
Technically,
yeah,
he was a failure.
Okay, yeah, because we have that too. But specifically, like
Sparkster, Arrow the Acrobat.
Okay, so then I guess
Mario.
Wait,
I feel like Mario should be in his own.
You want to? You want to?
Yeah,
like,
otherwise,
yeah,
the answer's just Mario.
Yeah, answer's
okay,
just Mario.
All right.
But mascot platform. Sorry, when I think of mascot, I guess I'm just thinking of like licensed stuff, like
well, that counts too.
Like a, well, let me come back to that one. But then brawler,
mm-hmm.
probably Maximum Carnage. Yeah, maybe I don't know. The Power Rangers one was pretty fun. Maybe I'll say Maximum Carnage. Let me think about the mascot platformer.
Well, while you think of the mascot platformer, I'll go through. So what's the first option again?
Fighting game.
I guess I'd have to give it to Tournament Fighter because that's the one that we played the most. So
sure.
Tournament Fighters. But Killer Instinct's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went to that after the fact and it definitely has that awesome, rare, pre-rendered look and then controls really well. So that's a second place for that one. Mascot platformer, I do love Cool Spot. That's a really good game. Like, so for those who don't know, Cool Spot is the spot that is on the side of a bottle of 7-Up. And sometimes he's rendered as a character with, like, a pair of shades and some, like, white Converse and some white gloves. That character is awesome. And then some random idiot at 7-Up was just like, we really should turn it into a game. So Virgin made that game.
Yeah.
And you are tiny the whole time. So the conceit here is that you are the size of, like, the cool spot on a bottle of soda. And it's just neat because you start at the beach, you end up in a tub. There's all these cool environments. So that's up there. Earthworm Jim is another good one.
Sure.
I don't know. For some reason, my brain's shouting cool spot. There's probably one that I'm forgetting, but I'm going to give it to that at the moment.
Yeah, because you're not counting, like, Donkey Kong as a mascot, right?
I mean,
he technically counts.
Yeah, it sounds like we just want to leave the Nintendo heavyweights out of this to get a more interesting answer.
So let me amend my Brawler answer. My favorite fighter on the system, Tournament Fighters. My favorite Brawler would be War of the Gems. And then my favorite mascot platformer would be Cool Spot.
Okay.
And then for the Brawler category, I got to give it to Turtles in Time. Mm-hmm. Nothing comes close to me. Like, the mechanics of fighting in that game are just incredible. So, like, you have to tweak the controls a little bit. Like, if you go into the controls, turn the back attack on, and make the dashing manual. Don't do automatic dashing, because you have to just kind of... You have to move forward, and then the computer starts to make you run. It's a freaking nightmare, especially if you're doing the Shredder level in the Technodrome, where you have to dash into the foot soldiers and then fling them. If you have auto on, it's... Oh, my God.
You need more runway to get it working, right?
Yes. Yeah. But if you have it set up like that, there are so many little attacks you can do as the Turtles. So, like, you can do a run, and then you can start making them cartwheel by pressing the jump button. But if you do that, and then you press the attack button, the Turtles will slide forward on their back, on their shell, and do a sliding kick into an enemy. You can do jumping kicks, and there's like a jump with a hard downward angle.
Mm-hmm.
But if you press the jump button at different points at the height of the jump, you'll either start doing this like slashing motion where the character is kind of like just falling down slowly and you're slicing as you're going down. Or if you press it again with different timing, you do this kind of like a hop and a leaping kick where you kick outward and up.
Yeah, it's like you're giving the foot soldiers a show.
Yes, and so there's that. There's when you grab... Now, this the iconic thing from Turtles in Time is throwing the foot soldier into the screen. Mm-hmm. So the foot soldier through Mode 7, you just see him get huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, and that's a fun attack. But you can also grab them and slam them into the ground and clear everything around you.
Yeah, I do like Turtles in Time, but I kind of feel like... kind of degenerates into me trying to do the Bam Bam Droopy Dog Slam over and over.
I mean, if you can go that route with it, but I think of all the fighting games on that system, nothing comes close to just the level of creativity with all the different things you can do with the Turtles and Turtles in Time.
I have to amend my answer again for platformer because I keep forgetting games. Mega Man X.
I don't know if we count that.
Why?
That's a run and gun.
Yeah, it's a run and gun.
It's more run and gun than the platform.
But there's a lot of platforming.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
We all recognize it's a fantastic game.
Well, you know, we've answered Zach's questions. Let's hear Zach's answers. And then how about we kind of end with, like, maybe talking about some of our highlights of Super Nintendo?
Hang on a second. I thought Mega Man was considered a platformer.
Well, it's a run and gun platformer. The emphasis is more on the shooting.
It's not what people mean when they say mascot platformer.
There's a lot of jumping and platforming in Mega Man.
Listen.
That's what makes it difficult.
If you're not collecting 100 of something, is it really a mascot platformer?
Hmm.
Yeah, I agree with Zach.
Okay. Well,
Zach, let's hear your answers. Well,
that was convincing, wasn't it?
Favorite fighting game.
All right. So favorite fighting game has got to be Street Fighter 2.
Which version?
So I have a lot of, it's not like technically the best, but my favorite is the original World Warrior Street Fighter 2.
Oh, okay.
Because just that's what I played in the arcade. That's what I had on like home console.
Okay.
Learned to beat that like highest difficulty without getting hit with all the characters. And that skill has left me. But it's still a great time. Favorite brawler is definitely the Ninja Warriors.
That's a good game.
It's been the Ninja Warriors again, or whatever you want to call it.
Ninja Saviors, if you bought it here in America.
Like the Switch version, I think, is a better version of it. There is a ton of... Similar to what Robert was saying about Turtles in Time, there's a ton of... moveset options, a ton of subtlety you have.
Yes, very clever.
Ninja Warriors with very few inputs. And some of them are like fairly non-traditional, like Kamaitachi can't properly grab and throw, which you're used to from like those kind of games at the time, like Final Fight. Kunoichi is kind of a traditionally controlling character. And the ninja doesn't even have a proper jump but he works because he's like the heavy. No, I think that's fantastic. And mascot platformer, I'll be honest, when I asked the question, I was thinking Mario, you know? I was mm-hmm. just going to say Mario. Mm-hmm. But if we're ruling out Mario, mm-hmm. I'll say Aladdin.
Mm. Well, Aladdin's a very good mascot platformer.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that version better than the Genesis version.
I do, too. And I think part, like, at some level, it might be partly just bias in favor of Capcom and mm-hmm. knowing that Shinji Mikami worked on the game. Mm-hmm. But
I think that one's more in the spirit of the cartoon because mm-hmm. he doesn't have a sword like the Genesis one. He doesn't have a sword and he's jumping on people. And mm-hmm. it's like, that feels more like the spirit of the actual movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, you know, jumping acrobatics. And flips, acrobatics, mm-hmm. swinging on poles and whatever. Yeah.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I think that in terms of mascot platformers and going back to Capcom, the Mickey game that they made for the Super Nintendo is really good.
Yeah.
Magical Quest.
Yeah.
Not my favorite, but it is better than I expected, certainly.
That has a cult following for whatever reason. That's a really good one. And then Sony, ironically, Sony made a Mickey game on there. I forget what that one's called, but that has a really beautiful visual style. You know, one of the things about Super Nintendo that to me is kind of special is that, yes, some of the games have like a distinct look, but one of the games that really stands out to me in terms of like creating a true aesthetic is Yoshi's Island, because mm-hmm. it has that hand drawn. It's supposed to look like almost like a child's drawing in the background in some cases.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Nintendo's been trying and failing to recapture the magic of
that particular one. Yes, none of them get close, and it's hilarious to me because it's like you have the game where you did it right, just make more of that. Mm-hmm. But like when I've I co-lectured a class on game history, and I brought up how that's like one of the first examples of like a true deliberate aesthetic that a design team put in. And like, I do think older games would kind of go for a look, but the limitations of the hardware made it harder to like convey what they were trying to do. But by the time you get to that and the Super Nintendo, like you really start to see these styles that are standing out. Like the Mickey game that I'm talking about from Sony, it was beautiful, you know, when I remember putting it in and my aunt seeing it and just thinking, wow, you know, it looks almost like a cartoon. Mm-hmm. You know, the Mode 7 stuff, right? So like F-Zero, and some of it's cheesy, but a lot of it stands out. I mean, the shot of the foot soldier hitting the screen is so iconic to mm-hmm. so many people. Like mm-hmm. the Super Nintendo did a lot in terms of pushing forward that. I mean, then there's the pre-rendered stuff with Donkey Kong Country. Mm-hmm. I personally think it still holds up today.
It looks great.
And yeah, and that was, you know, I know we've talked about it before, but you grow up now, everything's HD. Most things are even being pumped out of Unreal and Unity. It's kind of hard to make something look like absolute crap. Well, in the Super Nintendo era, it's like there's some games that look like hot garbage. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Donkey Kong Country. And like you see it, you could feel it when you would turn these games on when it was something special. And Donkey Kong Country was like, wow,
is this a video game? Because like to me, like I remember being wowed at the time, and I find it a lot less impressive now, which doesn't mean I don't appreciate the art of it. But like at the time, I certainly thought Donkey Kong Country looked better than say Yoshi's Island. And like my feeling on that is completely flipped as I've gotten older.
Hmm. I think the legend is that Yoshi's Island was like partially scrapped by management, and they told Miyamoto, they're like, Donkey Kong Country looks amazing, you've got to make your game look more amazing. And that's mm-hmm. when they kind of went and developed the new art style for it.
Man, I kind of want to see the other version of Yoshi's Island then.
I'm sure it's in the Giga Leak or something.
Yeah, we should go browse in the Giga Leak.
Oh god. And then, you know, Star Fox and the Stunt Racer.
Stunt Race FX?
Yes. That's the one with the big rig, or the monster trucks, right?
I haven't played it.
Oh, man. It's on the SNES Online. I'm sorry. I'm forgetting the name.
That's all right.
Our lovely listeners. But there's two by Argonaut. There's Star Fox, and then there's the one where you're in, like, the kind of monster trucks. Those games are also really cool. Like, super early polygonal graphics, but they got that shit running on a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's impressive. I don't think they look very good. They went with like a simpler aesthetic that still holds up to some extent, but yeah. So how about some more Maruho trivia challenge?
Oh no.
I guess we can close out the episode with this. Sure.
All right, here we go. Number 7. Some Super Nintendo game cartridges include special chips that supplement the Super Nintendo hardware. Name three such chips and one game that uses each. Failing that, because I don't think you guys are as into like chip names as I am.
No.
But failing that, at least name three games that use different chips.
Well, I didn't know there were three chips. I know there's the Super FX and the Super FX 2 chip. What's the third chip?
Yeah, all I know is the Super FX.
Oh, there's a ton of them.
Hmm. Those are the only two I know.
Okay. So give me...
And then Star Fox, and then... It's not Stunt Race. I swear I think Stunt Race is the one with the unicycle, isn't it?
Maybe no, it is. No, that's Uniracers.
Oh, okay. Then it is, I guess, Stunt Race FX.
Yeah. So those both use the FX chip.
Okay. Well, and then Yoshi's Island uses the FX chip as well. Mm-hmm. It uses the FX2 chip.
Yeah. So those are all using Super FX. To give you... I made a list of like the more common chips with the more well-known games. Mm-hmm. Pilot Wings and Super Mario Kart use the DSP-1 chip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mega Man X 2 and 3 use the CX4 chip. You remember like the wireframe graphics?
I remember those two games. There was.
Yeah.
I didn't know the chip name at all, but.
The SA1 chip, which is used for like sped up processing power, is used in Kirby Superstar and Super Mario RPG.
Mm.
It's also more recently been used by ROM hackers to like add SA1 support into games that don't have it to eliminate the slowdown. So there's like a hack of Gradius 3, for example, that doesn't have slowdown because it's been given SA1 emulation. And then finally, SDD1, which is for handling a lot of large graphics data, was used by Street Fighter Alpha 2 and Star Ocean.
Oh, Alpha 2. That's another miracle on the system.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of, number 8, arguably the biggest game of the era on any hardware was Street Fighter 2, and its release on Super Nintendo was a huge win for Nintendo, but then Capcom kept releasing new versions again and again on every system in sight. All told, how many Street Fighter games were released on the Super Nintendo?
Robert?
Yeah.
Is it 4?
It is 4.
Because it's Alpha and then three versions of Street Fighter 2, right?
Yeah, it's Alpha 2 and three versions of Street Fighter 2.
Hmm.
That's 1.83 points.
Okay.
Actually, it's more like 2.45 points because I got most of the chip question.
Number 9, the Ogre Battle series name, as well as the subtitles of its first two entries on the Super Nintendo, The March of the Black Queen and Let Us Cling Together, are all references to songs by what famous band?
Oh, Let Us Cling.
Ogre Battle, March of the Black Queen, Let Us Cling Together are all song titles from...
Probably some band that nobody likes.
Yeah, you're real close, man.
Was it the Beatles or something?
No, it's Queen. They're all Queen songs.
Oh, I was going to say Queen.
I was about to say Queen.
And I didn't think I was right.
Queen has like two good songs.
I'd like to say that you both had plenty of time to pipe up, say your name, and throw
it. I mean, Queen instantly popped into my head. And I was just like, I don't think that's right. I can't remember. I mean, I'm not a big Queen fan. Like a couple songs, but I was just like, nah, I don't think that's right.
All right, we're going to close this out with a lightning round. As is traditional.
Oh, no.
So what's going to happen is I'm going to give you the Japanese name of a game, and you're going to give me its Western name.
Oh, no.
Puzzle Bobble.
Oh, Puzzle Bobble. Isn't that a... Damn it. It's the one I like a lot.
Guess not.
Jesus, I'm not going to remember it right now. Just say it.
Bust a Move.
But yes. Ah. God dang it.
Final Fantasy USA.
Oh, Final Fantasy, it's the one everyone complains is too easy. It's not Legend.
It is not Legend.
Oh, man. That's another one I have to pass.
You and I were just talking about this, and I don't remember what it is.
It's Mystic Quest.
Yes.
You're doing great. Muscle Bomber.
Muscle Bomber?
Bomberman?
No.
Muscle Bomber.
I don't know.
Saturday Night Slam Masters.
Oh.
Featuring Mike Hagar from the Final Fight series. It was a wrestling game. Nitro Punk's Might Heads.
Pass.
No idea.
Rocky Rodent. Sonic Wings.
Oh. I'm not going to remember it right now, but I go ahead.
There's a lot of tip of the tongue misery you're dealing with right now, Robert. That's Aero Fighters. Super Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong Country.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. ABC Monday Naito Futoboru.
Madden?
Not Madden.
Tecmo Bowl? Super Tecmo Bowl?
No. ABC Monday Night Football. That was a trick question.
Oh, okay.
Area 88.
I don't know.
Some alien game, I guess?
UN Squadron.
Oh.
Magic Johnson no Super Slam Dunk.
NBA Jam?
Super Slam Dunk.
Oh, my God.
It's weird because, like, they took off the Magic Johnson name in the U.S. It's there in Japan, but not in the U.S.
Interesting.
Even though his face is on the box. So there must have been some negotiation over, like, it costs this much to include his name. Mm-hmm. Can we include his face? Can we include his likeness? So there's, like, three copies of Magic Johnson's face on the box. Est Polis Denki.
Mm-mm.
Luffy and the Fortress of Doom.
Oh.
Space Bazooka.
Space Bazooka?
I don't know.
I'm going to say Star Fox just to be annoying.
No, it could be further off. It's Battle Clash.
Oh, okay.
It's that game I was talking about with the giant robots and the super scope. Finally, please tell me you get this one. Panel Dupont.
Oh.
And we just say
Puzzle League.
Tetris Attack.
Tetris Attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you for playing my game.
And thank you for listening to this latest edition of the 7 Minutes Podcast.
Mm-hmm.